Walt Whitman wrote, "Every moment of dark and light is a miracle." These are powerful words. Every moment of dark and light is a miracle. Recently, a friend asked me what my talk was going to be about today. I answered, "I'm going to talk about darkness and light." "Oh." I asked, "What are you thinking?" She replied, "It just hits me the wrong way. I don't know." I find this response to be very intriguing. What could possibly be the it that hits her the wrong way about darkness and light? Ever curious, I've been using word association to gather people's responses to the words dark and light. I asked one friend about the word dark. No response. So I moved on. And light? Oh, light. Light is everything. I'm light. Life is all about light. Life is all about light. Curiouser and curiouser. How about dark? I asked. Negativity. Opposite of light. Another friend responded to dark. Heavy, impenetrable, hopelessness. And to light, perfection, no burden, creativity. I have found that responses to the word dark are about 99% negative. Why is this? Is it the result of DNA, an ingrained fear of the dark? Or is it cultural conditioning, a predictable association for people who've become infatuated with light? I think it's a bit of both. Some people said to me, "I don't like to talk about darkness. I'd rather be positive. I don't even want to think about anything dark." I have a dark question for you this morning. I hope you don't mind. Do you mind?
Yeah.
I've been asking friends this question. Their answers have been priceless, as well as the expressions on their faces. And here it is. What is on the dark side of the moon? Yes. Yeah. Now, most of us know that from the Earth, we only see one side of the moon. We always see the same features, the same man in the moon. Have you ever wondered about the other side of the moon? I never did in all my years until very, very recently. What is on the other side of the moon? And why is it called the dark side? Myths about the moon abound. Is it really made of green cheese? One of the most common and long-held misconceptions is that the moon has a permanent dark side. 20% of adults still believe that. The truth is, the dark side of the moon receives the same amount of light from our sun as the side that always faces us. We can't see that other side, so we call it the dark side. And scientists roll their eyes and grimace. You may be wondering why I'm talking about the moon today. Well, for me, the moon is a very beautiful and mysterious object in our sky. And it also epitomizes the dark and light conundrum. Does everything in the cosmos hold variances of dark and light? Are dark and light irretrievably connected? In 2013, on the solstice Sunday before Christmas, Jim McKinley, our minister, preached one of my favorite sermons, The Luminous Darkness. I had never heard these two words used together in my life, luminous and darkness. They form an oxymoron, as most of you know, a literary device making use of apparent opposites and specifically created to reveal a paradox. For me, the luminous darkness is a glorious paradox. It has totally enchanted me, and it will not let me go. I felt compelled to investigate further. This is what I so love about our Unitarian Universalist faith, that a few words, or even one word, from a sermon, a reading, a hymn, a story, or a benediction can inspire a unique personal journey of truth and meaning. The concept of luminous darkness has taken me to places I never thought I would go. What was the origin or first known usage of luminous darkness? Ever. I needed to know. So I got online. In his sermon, Jim referenced Howard Thurman's notable book, Luminous Darkness. This wasn't quite what I was looking for. But where did his title come from? In my research, I found a captivating reference from the Old Testament, The Life of Moses by Gregory of Nyssa. In the theology of Moses, God is the luminous darkness. Now that's an intriguing concept. Then I came upon another compelling source. Luminous darkness, the gateway to all understanding. All understanding. It was written in 2004 by New Age author and Unity minister Tony Boehm. Here's an enticing excerpt from her book. In a burst of blazing light that seemed to come from nowhere and everywhere at the same time, I realized that opposites, in whatever form they appear, are not two polarities, but opposites are, in fact, one divine complement, each needing the other to complete their purpose. She focuses on the luminous energy inherent in the dance of the complements. I'm so drawn to these words. I see the complements of darkness and light dancing everywhere I look, in all of nature, science, religion, art, music, literature, theater, and yes, even in love. The dance of the complements. How do you see darkness and light dancing in your life? What is the most luminous thing you can think of? The sun. Sure, of course. Throughout most of recorded history, the sun has been worshipped as a deity. And no wonder. Sunlight has a huge impact upon our physical and emotional well-being. We thrive in the light from our generous sun. Sunlight makes us happy. Many of us thrive in another kind of light, spiritual light. In the sacred art and literature of all the great religious traditions, light has been the foremost symbol or manifestation of God. divine being, spirit, the immortal. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, God separated the light from the primal darkness with the command, "Let there be light." And we humans have been polarizing darkness and light ever since we became sentient beings. Dualistic religious teachings portray an ongoing cosmic struggle between the opposing forces of light and the forces of darkness. A little scripture here from the Gospel of John. God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. From Thessalonians, ye are all the children of light and the children of the day. Ye are not of the night, nor of darkness. I think Photogen and Nycteris would disagree, don't you? They became the children of light and darkness. They are the dance of the complements. Let your light shine. How many times have you heard these words in our sanctuary and elsewhere? Frequently in our service, we sing the children's gospel song. Yep, this little light of mine. We sing, I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm going to let it shine. You know, I had never heard this song until I came to this church 7 years ago. I grew up Episcopal. Kind of high Episcopal. I never heard it there. I never knew I had a light to shine until I got here. Maybe if I had, I might have had a... Never mind. Okay. Sometimes I wonder when I'm singing these words, do I have a light of mine to shine? Where is it? I don't know. I don't understand. That would be nice. Often, though, I feel blinded by the light, overwhelmed by the ever-present call to shine my light. If some of us don't experience this light in a deep, personal way, might we feel somehow unworthy, non-spiritual, or at least spiritually confused? One of my favorite authors, Barbara Brown Taylor, famed Episcopal preacher, theologian, and prolific author, speaks to this confusion. In her latest book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, she writes, most spiritual seekers spend their whole lives pursuing enlightenment. Taylor accuses churches and New Age spiritualists with propagating a full solar spirituality, relentlessly seeking the light, even though we don't may not feel it. She affirms that believers as well as non-believers would be wise to uncover a lunar spirituality as well. Taylor is reviving an ancient idea in Christian theology that darkness holds divine mystery. She challenges the theological principle that darkness is evil, scary, or just plain bad, and encourages people to face the darkness as it holds more lessons than light. But darkness can be daunting. Here's a story about a dark, dark night that really happened to me. Many, many years ago, my college friend Pat and I and her two young children rented a cottage in Charleston, Rhode Island. Night soon fell on our first day of vacation. As I prepared for bed in my cozy little back bedroom, I happened to glance out the open window. I found myself staring into the blackest black I had ever seen. It was like the abyss of the backyard. I went to Pat's room quickly to get some support. My friend was rather amused at the whole thing. She promised me that there was nothing to be afraid of out there in the dark. I wasn't convinced, but I returned to my bedroom, and I closed the window, and I pulled down the shade, jumped into bed, and pulled up the covers. Pulled them up tight. I don't want that dark. Why was I so frightened that night? Well, darkness can be scary. We fear what could be lurking in the dark, ready to pounce upon us. Now, the tangible physical darkness is but one kind of darkness. There is another kind of darkness that frightens most of us. This would be our inner darkness, our own uncomfortable negative emotions and attributes, our darksome psyche, as Carl Jung would call it. Have you ever wondered why you do the things you do? Have you ever asked yourself, why am I thinking so negatively? Have you ever said something to someone and wondered, where did that come from? Have you ever been so angry that you felt out of control? Anybody? Or been so scared that you felt weak and powerless? Have you ever been jealous, mean-spirited, stubborn, or selfish? Have you ever thought, would they still love me if they knew the real me? Welcome to the human condition. Our inner natures can be perplexing and mystifying and sometimes disturbing. It's very difficult to acknowledge and embrace our darker emotions, but we are very good at pretending they don't exist, pulling up those covers. Debbie Ford, acclaimed speaker and life coach, wrote a book called The Dark Side of the Light Seekers. Well, I've highlighted most of this book. It is so good. It was just so inspiring to me. Here is but one of her important messages. Most of us long to see the light and to live in the beauty of our highest self. But we try to do this without integrating all of ourselves. Carl Jung affirms, one does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making our darkness conscious. He writes, the gold is in the dark. Ford believes we must find this gold in order to reunite with our sacred self. Do you remember the TV series Northern Exposure? That was so good. Especially with John Corbett in. Okay. Played by John Corbett, Chris Stevens often philosophized about life on his radio show. Remember that? Chris in the Morning? Here is one of his gems. There's a dark side to each and every human soul. We wish we were Obi-Wan Kenobi. And for the most part, we are. But there's a little Darth Vader in all of us. Face the darkness. Stare it down. Own it. As Brother Nietzsche said, being human is a complicated gig. Give that old dark night of the soul a big hug. For me, our deep dark selves are a treasure trove waiting to be discovered. We have the potential to transform our lives and learn new ways of being in the world. As Unitarian Universalists, we strive to affirm and promote the worth and dignity of every person. It's our first principle. I believe that if we nurture a deep compassion for our own dark side, we can more readily affirm and promote genuine compassion for all of struggling humanity. And yes, even for the tortured soul and deranged mind of our latest shooter. I'll close this morning with some words of Mark Twain for you. How many like Mark Twain? Yeah. He says, "Everyone is a moon and has a dark side which he never shows to anybody." So the next time you gaze up at the moon, you might just wonder about its other side. And if you ever have the notion to wonder about your own dark side, I wish for you the courage and faith to befriend it, to embrace your luminous darkness within, the deep mythic undertones of our lives. I will leave you now with the words of T.S. Eliot. "So the darkness shall be the light, and the stillness the dancing." Thank you.